A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, the Arrowcast, November 2015.
It is a period of podcast attrition. The Arrowcast is in danger of losing half of its audience, a whole two individuals. The Galactic Canning Fancier's podcast looms, ready to snatch up the deserters. The Padawan Arrow Skywalker seeks to become a true and honest podcast master. She seeks the aid of notorious smuggler Matt Solo and his co-pilot, the ferocious Chris Baca. In the legendary podcast runner, the Millennium Falcon, they head straight into the fray. Pursued by raspberry jam and paraffin enthusiasts, the Arrowcast aims to have a general discussion of Star Wars as they set out on their most adventuresome podcast, yes. Now, if you can imagine, that's with some cool music and it's like scrolling upwards like the Star Wars opening crawl. This is the podcast for November 2015. This podcast will be just be a, basically a general discussion of Star Wars. But before we get into that, how has your November been?
November's been alright. My American Thanksgiving, which you claim is way too close to December. I don't know, America.
No, it is too close. You got, you know, this... Well, you guys make a way bigger deal of the Thanksgiving than we do, but it's like you got this humongous turkey family meal and then... very soon you have another humongous turkey family meal. There's no time to digest it, no time to recover from it. Anyways, that's my opinion.
You can October go critique 7. The pilgrims. I don't know how this works, okay? That's just America. Anyway, my American Thanksgiving was pleasant. Yes, I had my good turkey, good ham, good time, so it was nice.
Turkey and ham.
Turkey, what, you have something against that too, Matt? Is it too much meat going on at American Thanksgiving?
No comments.
Yeah, did you have poutine at your Canadian Thanksgiving? Is that what's going on?
That would be good. There is, you know, any of the like takeout restaurants around here, they have turkey stuffing, poutine, and I just got to say, this is sort of unrelated to Thanksgiving, but this is about poutine in general since it was brought up. I'm a poutine purist. I just like, you know, the gravy, the cheese, and the fries. I don't like all this fucking ground beef or turkey stuffing put on. It's like, there's a fine line between being a poutine and being a bucket of slops. So, I don't know. That's just me. Anyhow,
is that a controversial Canadian opinion or something?
That's a controversial opinion because people love turkey stuffing poutine. But anyways.
Well, I guess my controversial American Thanksgiving criticism here is that I think stuffing is not really that exciting. I don't know why you want to put it in the turkey. Why can't you just enjoy the meat of the turkey on its own? Why do we need this extra nonsense?
I like stuffing, but putting it in the turkey, you have to be careful because, you know, putting stuffing in a raw turkey, you know,
yeah, that's going to be...
There's health concerns about it, so I can see somewhere you're coming from.
Well, not a raw turkey.
It doesn't have to be in the turkey.
Yeah. I like it maybe as like a side dish, but I don't know. It just doesn't go with turkey right together. It's weird for me.
Unless you're eating where they are sold the turkey, you're not eating the stuffing in the turkey, right? So, you know, I don't know what kind of servings you get in American Thanksgiving, but, you know, usually it is as a side.
This was some wild food discussion we've had on the podcast.
That's a good tangent. Anyhow, besides your Thanksgiving dinner and your wine and your pie and your turkey and your ham and your stuffing that wasn't so great, but how was the rest of your November?
It was all right. Honestly, it hasn't been that long since we last recorded anyway, so most of my time has just been playing a ton of mystery dungeon games again. They're back. Tried Tornico again when I, you know, I'm still trying to complete it from the last time I played it where I beat the main game, but then there's the extra dungeon where you start at level 1 completely, and everything in that dungeon is now randomized. I tried that again, I'm still terrible at it, so I'll put that one down for a bit. Then I started playing Sheeran the Wanderer again, picked that up. Not doing so hot in that either, but I've made a lot more progress than last time, so that's good. Not much to say other than I really don't know how long Sheeran 1 is, so I can't really, like, discuss how far I've gotten into it because it's separated by, like, you go through the randomized dungeon and then you hit a town to do some side questing and stuff, and then you go through more randomized dungeons. So I'm not really sure how far along I am. I'm still near the beginning of the game because I haven't done much in it, but...
Is this the DS, Sheeran?
Yes, the DS one, which is a remake of the original one.
Yeah, I wanted to pick that up, but I ended up picking up Izuna instead back in the day. But, yes, it always looked interesting.
Well, I heard Izuna's not a bad choice. I was thinking of picking it up someday.
Izuna's a bit lewd, but it's fun.
Keep that in mind. Thanks. I was hoping to pick up Azuri Dreams on that PSN sale that was on recently, but that's not on anywhere on PlayStation, because I heard that's a pretty good Mystery Dungeon-type roguelike game that was really prominent on the PlayStation back in the day. But alas, it's not there.
What's it go for these days?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know how popular it was, so I can't really judge how much it was. Like, the one localized Tornico game, which goes for a ton of money here because it didn't do well.
Oh, it was never localized then, this?
Azuri Dreams was localized, yeah. I think it still goes for a lot of money, probably.
Yeah.
It's probably kind of one of those cult classics, if I had to fathom a guess on it. And sometimes when my DS was charging, I would switch back to my 3DS and I picked up Etrian Mystery Dungeon again. I'm still working on the side quest where you solo the Mysterious Forest New Game Plus dungeon. Still haven't done the main post-game dungeon, which got really boring, as I discussed, near the end because it's just really tedious. So while Shin's charging, I'll just pick that up every now and then. I'm just really in a Mystery Dungeon mood.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Yeah. Not quite a Mystery Dungeon, but is a roguelike. I have picked up Crawl again, and I'm still absolutely terrible at it. The farthest I've gotten was a few days ago when I finally hit the lair. And then I think I hit the swamp after the lair, and then a black mamba killed me, and I was sad.
Yeah, did you finish the lair before you went to the swamp, or did you say, oh, here's the swamp, let's go right in there?
I did a fair bit of the lair, and I think I saw something that I needed to run from, so I'm like, oh, look, the swamp is right here, I might as well escape for now and see how this goes. Is it the swamp? I know I went to the swampish area. Maybe it was the sewer.
There's a swamp. There is a sewer, but it's,
two separate things. I can't recall which one was which, because I definitely did one of them, and it was really easy, and then I died in the latter one.
It would have to be the sewer would be the easy one.
Okay.
The sewer is a branch that randomly appears, and if you don't get at the entrance quick enough, it'll close.
Right.
And it's usually just a couple of potions and scrolls, but, potions and scrolls are game changers, so
yeah, of course.
That's still good. That's still all good.
Yeah, primarily running a Tengu as an air elementalist. Pretty determined on that one. Every now and then I change it around, but I'm pretty set on this Tengu. Tengus are cool.
Yeah, Tengus are pretty cool. They can fly and they've got talents.
I think I'm picking up stuff every time, but sometimes the game just doesn't roll the dice fair on me.
No, there is sometimes where it's like you get crushed as soon as you start.
Walk in and I'm surrounded by a ton of goblins or something.
I wouldn't say there's a way to play Crawl, but there are certain things that you pick up the more you play it. Like, you learn that oftentimes it's better just to run away and come back later to a situation. Or even that opening up the skill screen and putting your skill learning on manual rather than automatic can help a lot. And
yeah, definitely.
Like, there's a lot of things that you can pick up. And you're playing an air elementalist, so chances are you've probably blown yourself up a couple of times. But no, there's certain things that you pick up that you learn how to play in Crawl, and like you'll have a bunch of bad rolls, but then you'll get, you know, the run, and you'll get a couple of runes, and you'll get your first victory. And by the way, the first time you get to the end of the game, you're probably going to die. But, you know, there's, you know, like the run kind of thing, and it's a very good game in the sense that it usually gives you a way out of situations. The only wiggle room with that lies in the first couple of floors, that if you find something out of depth, you're probably going to get crushed. But as you go on and you get more and more equipment, you get a lot of options. You know, you want to have mutation resistance, you want to have corrosion resistance and all this good stuff, and you accrue all this stuff and you get too much stuff. The game was crazy to play when it had individual types of chunks for every kind of monster. That was crazy.
Oh, wow, that's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, so it's always changing, and they just released 0.17, so I've been playing it as well myself. I had a victory a couple days ago, but I'm also running a fairly robust character right now. I had to drag myself away to do the podcast.
Because yeah, I had to drag myself away, too.
The mutations I have going on now as a demon spawn are basically making me very resistant and resilient to negative energy and torment, and that's a lot of what they throw at you in the hells. And, like, I'm also worshipping the slime god that eats items and heals me and satiates me as the slimes eat items on the floor, so it's a very interesting run, and this slime god also, once you're at maximum piety with her, will start mutating you as well, so it's really interesting run. I've got 11 runes right now. I'm hoping for 15. You know, I could walk into Gehenna tomorrow and instantly get vaporized. We'll see. But I want my first 15 rune run not to be with the holy god, the shining one.
I'm terrible at remembering the god names. No,
give me one about slime. That's cool. Being the justice leader or whatever from a Saturday morning cartoon. I don't want Leonardo as my god. Donatello as my god. Anyhow, that's been my crawl adventure, but this is your segment. Have you been up to anything else?
Well, since we're all both in crawl, man, have you been up to anything else?
I've been up to crawl mostly, but yeah, it's been actually not that long since the last podcast, so not any big events really to report on my end. I mean, our Thanksgiving was in October, so you know I didn't have any turkey or ham lately.
I guess all we can say is you guys should be glad we're not doing a crawl cast yet, because it's halfway there already.
It's halfway there, yeah. Besides crawl, I played through Wonder Boy 3: The Dragon's Trap on Sega Master System. It was a really good game, sort of like an action adventure game, and you get new different forms to turn into. You can turn into a hawk or a lion and things like that. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot more straightforward than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be fairly open-ended, but it's actually a lot more straightforward than I thought it was going to be. But it's fairly big for a Master System game and really competent. Aside from that, yeah, it's just been crawl, really, for my entertainment. So I'm getting towards the end of Breaking Bad, and I'll talk about that on the next podcast, probably.
Other and One Punch that, Man is still awesome.
That is still awesome, and oh, I didn't watch it this week. I'll have to.
I didn't either, so we're good. We're actually even now.
Yeah, so I'll have to get on that. Have to get on that, folks.
Escape pod landing. Where am I?
It's the new Star Wars Land of the Jawas that you put together. Action figures sold separately. You can move the action lever and make the Jawa capture R2-D2.
R2? Are you all right? What are they doing to you?
You can raise the elevator and make R2-D2 disappear into the sandcrawler.
Hang on, R2. I'm right behind you. Me too.
Kenner's new Star Wars Land of the Jawas. Action figures each sold separately.
Star Wars is an epic space opera conceived by George Lucas and taking inspiration from such literary sources as Foundation and serials as Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon, but also inspiring countless properties after the fact. The most well-known components of Star Wars are the films, the first releasing in 1977, and they have influenced fans of many ages and time periods since the original releases. Star Wars is far too big and varied to talk about exhaustively in this podcast, so we're going to dial it back to a more casual discussion and talking points. Star Wars has definite themes. It's often a David versus Goliath kind of story with a small band taking on the Galactic Empire. There are various consistent lore, such as the Jedi, Sith, the Force, droids in hyperspace. There are various missives and elements that make Star Wars what it is. But the property is so massive that one individual may have had an entirely different experience to that of another. Which brings us to our discussion tonight. Just to kick things off, how were you introduced to Star Wars?
I tried to figure this out, but it was definitely in my early childhood, so I can't recall. I'm thinking it might have been airing on television or something. At least the first movie, A New Hope, was airing on television. That may or may not have been around the time rumors that an actual episode 1 were being made at that time. Like, it was actually finally being to film because, if I recall correctly, Lucas was planning to make episode 1 for years, like since the 80s or something, but it wasn't starting to become a thing until something around the mid-90s, I would guess. But right. If I had to guess, I think it was probably around the mid-90s when I first was introduced to Star Wars. Definitely the first movie, and maybe the second and third one. Second and third meaning episode 5 and 6. Maybe when I got them on VHS, or maybe they were also on TV. But it's just been such a big thing in my childhood that I really can't pinpoint it. But I remember it was a prominent thing, and I was hooked immediately because aliens are really cool, and I love space. And just the whole science fantasy aspect of it with lightsabers and everything. It's just really cool. Star Wars is awesome.
All right, cool. So, yes, so that we've been around, mid-90s is a good place to start. You would have been old enough, at least, to understand some of the themes and such at that point. I would have been introduced to Star Wars a lot earlier because, number one, my folks were quite into it. My older brother was quite into it, him being older than me, of course, born around the time of the first movie, so that was a big part of both our childhoods, so we had a lot of the, like, the Kenner figures and things like that. The folks like the Star Wars figures, basically, because they were fairly sturdy for kids. They didn't have the elastic waists of the like G.I. Joes and such, if anyone out there had those as kids. In the movies, of course, the folks had copies of them for a long time. I had VHSs of Star Wars growing up. It's on TV all the time, so I was exposed to it very early. I always liked Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi more than New Hope. I'm fairly more like on level with them now, but we'll talk more about those when we get to this film specifically. But yeah, they were a big part of my childhood. We've had a Star Wars cookbook. I remember Chewbacca's balls in it.
Oh, man.
Chocolate covered peanut butter balls. But every time I remember thinking about Chewbacca's balls, I say, yeah, so, I mean,
was this like an adult cookbook?
No, it was Chewbacca's chocolate covered peanut butter balls. I mean, it was a family affair of Star Wars, so yeah, I was introduced to it fairly early, and as well, it just became a big part of my childhood because it was a very present and prevalent thing in my childhood.
So were a lot of your Star Wars toys hand-me-downs, or did you pick up a couple of yourself?
No, well, most of them would have been my brother's because I would have been quite young even when those movies were coming out, so he would have been age appropriate for them, and I would have used them later. So for Star Wars, they would have been hand-me-downs. And by the time The Phantom Menace came out, I wouldn't have really been looking for new Star Wars figures. So
yeah. I had a couple of Star Wars stuff of myself for as a child, but they were mostly like small trinkets because I wasn't cool enough to have action figures as a child. I could only have so few Power Rangers, apparently. I'll have a bigger discussion on my childhood with books later in the cast, so I'll reserve that for then.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the only other merchandise that I recall having, besides, you know, the books, were the trading cards, which came out around 2001, so I guess that's in time for The Phantom Menace, but I guess that's also pretty much the time when I could, you know, be more, if it's actually spend money and go to one of those old trading card dispensers from back in the day and get myself a pack. Yeah. I think that's pretty much the extent of my Star Wars merchandise as a child.
I think the only Star Wars cards I ever had were probably from Wizard or Inquest magazine, but I had the Marvel comics of Star Wars and things like that, so I had some interesting merchandise as well, so.
Where is that interview that Lucas mentioned that Star Wars was also partially for the toys? Because I guess it worked, considering us.
I don't know. I don't know a written interview offhand, but watching the special features on the DVDs, basically they say, yeah, it was meant to be a merchandising thing.
And a lot of things from the 80s and the 70s were merchandising things. He-Man was made to sell toys and cheap toys at that because they use all the same parts. They just change the heads.
Yeah.
Like G.I. Joe sell toys. Transformers sell toys. Creepy Crawler cartoon sell weird glue shit that you bake.
You know, man, I remember that.
Well, even in the commercials, like, you know how you have a whole bucket of Beyblades? It's because you watch the show and love Beyblades. So it's like, that's the main point of children's entertainment, is to get them to go out and buy stuff. I would contend that air toy commercials were better than the toy commercials of kids these days, but that's a matter of opinion. But I don't mind that Star Wars is meant to be a merchandising juggernaut, and that it is. Because I like it, and that's personal bias, but as long as you make an informed decision about what you're buying, and as long as you're buying something you want to support or something that you're a fan of, I don't see the harm in it, so that's my opinion on that kind of stuff.
The Luke Skywalker X-Wing Pilot from the Star Wars Action Figures Collection, each sold separately.
I'm Jawa. Wanna buy a droid? Show me what you got.
It's R5-D4 and the Power Droid.
So.
And here's Greedo, Han Solo, and Walrus Man.
You've had it now, Solo. Yeah.
Greedo, it's Ben Kenobi and his lightsaber. We're in trouble. Let's get out of here.
Luke Skywalker X-Wing Pilot, R5-D4, Greedo, and other action figures sold separately from Kenner.
Now, as I mentioned, Star Wars is sort of an umbrella at this point. There's a myriad of properties related to it. However, the property that most people will remember and that people are exposed to first, typically, is the movies, the Star Wars movies. And there's three from way back, three from not so way back, and there's going to be three in the future. Which trilogy of Star Wars did you start with?
The original trilogy, episode 4, 5, and 6.
Right. And it's interesting when you think about 4, 5, and 6. It was sort of made with the intention that it could go forward or backwards, so kind of sneaky.
Yeah.
I don't think Star Wars was actually named episode 4 until Empire Strikes Back came out, though. I think that was an afterthought, but then...
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think when they first, showed Star Wars in theatrical theaters, A New Hope, I don't even think it was called A New Hope yet. I think it was just Star Wars, and then by the time Empire Strikes Back, it became episode 4, A New Hope, and so on.
Right, and the episodic nature of it, that harkens back to, again, serialized space operas like Buck Rogers. It's sort of meant to be nostalgic for people that grew up with that stuff as well. We're talking about the original trilogy, but of course, the original trilogy is not always the original trilogy. You said you've seen it in the mid-90s, I think. So did you see the original trilogy first, or did you see the special edition first?
Considering I think I saw it on TV, I feel like it was probably the original release before the edits came in.
Right. I remember people were really wanting to go to the theater to see the re-releases of Star Wars, and I kind of regret not doing it myself when they came out with the special edition. So especially I would have liked to have seen The Empire Strikes Back again, but...
Yeah, I've never seen the original trilogy on the big screen. I mean, every now and then they have those, like, nostalgia nights, or whatever you want to call them, at theaters, but yeah, I still have yet to do that.
I've seen the Indiana Jones trilogy in that kind of format, but not Star Wars. Now, I'm mentioning special editions, and before we get into our feelings about the films themselves, one of the biggest contentions about these releases of the original movies is how often there's edits made to them. Now, these can be range from fairly innocuous to fairly severe. I always say that Han shot first because he did. But when we think about it, is this within George Lucas's rights for his vision of his films? Like, what do you think about these changes?
Honestly, I think I'm okay with the fact that he changes his films. I mean, it's his property, it's his vision. But when you put it on a Blu-ray, which has a ton of space, you can have the original version, and you can have your newer version. Why doesn't that happen?
Exactly. Or at least release the original set. They don't even have to be have a general release. The people that will buy them online and probably buy them at cost. So it's like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I know that he's revisited them multiple times. It's just, even if you draw a picture and you keep going back to it again and again and again, you'll never be satisfied. So I'm kind of happy that it's out of his hands now. I don't begrudge him the changes. I don't like the changes, but I don't begrudge them. Like I said, Han Solo shooting second is bullshit. He's a smuggler. He's a scoundrel. He's a criminal.
I always go back and forth on that, actually, but I think I prefer Han shooting first.
Well, half of it is the way he did it is jank as fuck. But, excuse my new age language about that. But, I don't think, even if you look at Han's greater heroism and scruples in the later movies, I don't think he's the kind of guy that would shoot second. It just doesn't come across that way in terms of self-preservation, and he's wanting to stay ahead of Jabba.
In order of preference, I would prefer Han shooting first, and then Han and Greedo shooting at the same time, but definitely not Greedo shooting first.
I would prefer Jabba with a sniper rifle shooting first, but Greedo tries to shoot Jabba through the window, but he's kind of nearsighted and accidentally shoots towards Han, and Han shoots Greedo in retaliation, and then is served some papers and has to appear in court. Is how I prefer it, but, you know, we can't always get what we want, kind of thing.
Was this Luke Wright Ace Attorney? What just happened here?
That would be interesting and cool. The other change that I really don't like, I mean, there's an Ewok party at the end of Return of the Jedi, spoilers. That's why I always talk about Ewok parties, you know, the chub-chub stuff, but it's like, I don't mind that they put, like, Coruscant and
Naboo
in this. That's whatever, that's a galactic celebration. I don't like that they've replaced a certain Force ghost with a younger actor to have better continuity with the prequel trilogy. It's just, I think it's an insult to the actor.
Man, I don't think we should keep it vague. I mean, this is the Star Wars cast. I think we can say it.
Yes, okay, whatever. I don't think that Anakin Skywalker should have had a young Force ghost. I think the argument is that when Anakin became Darth Vader, that's when Anakin died. But you take his mask off in Star Wars Return of the Jedi, and he's aged. I think that the older Force ghost, is a better touch because it shows that Vader's been purified, kind of thing. He's been redeemed.
Oh, I definitely agree on that. I heard about that change, that upset me so much, because I thought it was a really touching moment at the end of Return of the Jedi when Darth Vader is Anakin, and then spoiling the movie, but I mean, come on, this is a Star Wars cast, so whatever. But
yeah,
it was really when he became Anakin in his last moments, so he can die as Anakin and not die as Darth Vader. That just...
I mean, and like I said, it's that guy's legacy as well to be in one of the, you know, the biggest movies of its time and biggest franchises of all time. Anyhow, I digress. There's other changes I don't like. I mean, there's lots of nonsense going on in the foreground and the background just because.
Yeah, but, stuff like that's, I mean, irritating, it's more, but not as upsetting as Han or Anakin.
It's more forgivable than those kind of changes that are actually fairly major and controversial changes, and they're major and controversial for a reason. I guess we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves talking about how we don't like the changes in the movies before we talk about our feelings about the movies, but in general, how do you feel about the Star Wars saga?
Well, the original trilogy is definitely, I think, a lot stronger than the newer trilogy. Newer trilogy, I saw all of that in theaters on the big screen because I was old enough and they were actually around, but you know, it doesn't quite have the same magic. They were still good in ways. Mostly Episode 3 was the one I was most in favor with, but Episode 3 is still lacking that magic of Episode 4 through 6.
Yeah, 3 is not that bad, and it has the high ground meme and such, but
3 does have a lot of good lightsaber fights. I mean, I'll give it that. I mean,
It does have good lightsaber fights. I mean, I've had a bit of contention because I like the... I think that the lightsaber fights in the original trilogy are better dialogue because they're more deliberate and there's more tension between the characters.
Yeah.
See, this feels like there's more at stake, but I will admit that I was excited to see Yoda fight with a lightsaber in the prequel trilogy.
Oh, that was really cool. Yoda just doing flips and everything. It was amazing.
People say that Count Dooku is a waste, but hey, I like Christopher Lee. Rest in peace.
Yeah. He's such a cool dude. Christopher Lee, not Count Dooku. He was a jerk.
Count Dooku more.
Oh, yeah.
General Grievous, as ridiculous as that was kind of cool, too. I mean, there are cool parts to the prequel trilogy, and it was a fun... they were fun movies to see in theaters, regardless of the problems I had with it. I say there was more problems with The Phantom Menace than any of them.
I'm going to argue that Attack of the Clones is the most problematic one out of the newer trilogy.
There's just so much that made me cringing. The Phantom Menace, I just can't.
There's so much that made me cringing. Episode 2, so... Pretty much the entire Anakin and... What's her name? Should I just... Amidala. Yeah. The entire romance between Anakin and Queen Amidala / Padme was just really irritating, and it makes episode 1 look better, in my opinion.
When Anakin was just 5 years old, he said that Padme looked like an angel, so, you know, that was set in the stars.
Yeah, that was really awkward to watch. Just watching those two, you're like, man, is this who he's gonna marry? There's such an age gap. This is so weird.
I don't even mind the age gap so much as I mind it was really awkward, and it just seemed kind of forced between the two individuals.
Yeah, their entire relationship is just awkward and irritable.
I suppose that's supposed to be part of it. He's supposed to be going towards the dark side, so his whole relationship with Amidala is part of his fall. But I do enjoy the original trilogy more. I mean, I like... Empire Strikes Back is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I like it because in that trilogy, like, there's the introduction, and then in the middle movie is usually when things get dark and things get the most tense. And while Return of the Jedi, of course, has a lot of tension, I think there's a lot more tension in The Empire Strikes Back, and it's a lot darker and it's a lot more serious. It's just a movie I can watch again and again. So, The Empire Strikes Back is my favorite. I'm kind of concerned about where they're going to go after Return of the Jedi, but, I mean, we'll see how that happens. I do like that it ended in Ewok party, and that they're singing Jub Jub. It's like, Ewoks are cool.
I mean, there's definitely... Nostalgia is definitely a big factor on why we prefer the original trilogy. For me, you know, Luke's story, I think, is just far more interesting than Anakin's story. Anakin coming of age story, I just find to be a drag because I just complained about his relationship and his becoming to Darth Vader. I just didn't quite go all the way for me. But Luke, I don't know, Luke's story for me is just far more interesting. And I guess it's because it's almost a more simpler story. I just find it appealing.
All he wanted to do is go to Tashi Station for some power converters.
The movie just ended in 30 minutes or something.
That would be great. What do you think of droids?
Oh, the droids, you know, primarily R2-D2 and C-3PO, that's the discussion. Those two are great. They have a great chemistry. They're just a fun duo. Droids in general, I mean, droids are cool. They're robots, right? They're like robots. Yeah. We like robots.
Yeah, they're cool. They're cool and they're interesting. You know, every kid that watches Star Wars, I think, wants their own astromech droid and interpreter droid. It'd just be fun. It would just be fun.
You know, back onto the lightsaber topic, I do agree with you about the original trilogy having more of a dialogue, but I do also really like the newer trilogy's lightsaber fights. I think it's mostly because the cast is technically younger, and it's a more fresher take, so that's why they're all high, like ridiculous actions and fast-paced, but I like them both.
You can do a lot more too, right? So.
Yeah, so I like both the fights a lot. Lightsaber fights are cool and interesting.
Yeah, and dangerous. So don't try it at home, kids.
Yeah.
Speaking of lightsabers, do you like lightsabers that have two mini lightsabers coming out the side? And are you excited for The Force Awakens?
I don't know how to feel about the lightsaber. I just see it like an actual action. Because It looks weird, but I guess it works somehow. I don't know. Well, anyway, for The Force Awakens, though, I'm looking forward to it. Part of me is a little dubious just because episode one I got really excited about, and we all know how that turned out. But I think it'll be alright. I'm actually trying to stay a bit in the dark about Force Awakens, so I haven't really read up on any insight on it besides just watching the trailers. And the trailers look good, but trailers are sometimes untrustworthy.
I watched the reveal trailer, and I think part of why I'm excited about it is that the original Star Wars trilogy was a used future. Like, everything had the signs of duress and being used and being put through its paces. So the way that Star Wars is like, you can tell that they've been living in this world and that these machines have been in battles and have been through the desert and things like that. That's another complaint I have about the prequel trilogy, is that everything looks too clean. But the way that they're doing the future trilogy, I guess the sequel trilogy, it does resemble the original Star Wars more aesthetically, I think. And I think that's playing on my nostalgia a bit.
Yeah.
I know better than to get too excited for it, because it could go south really fast.
Yeah, I try to keep myself in check, but a lot of the trailer does look really promising and cool.
Yeah, it does. Promising and cool is better than interesting and cool, I guess. I'm holding out hope for it. It'll be released just before my birthday, so I'll see it around then, and it'll take the place of the Hobbit movies, I guess, as my Christmas films will be Star Wars again, so.
So speaking of lightsabers, Matt, bringing up lightsabers again, what color would your lightsaber be?
Oh, I would be Matthew of many colors. Just like Saruman.
Alright. Good choice.
It's the Star Wars Imperial Troop Transporter that you put together. Batteries not included. Stormtrooper sold separately.
What's that?
It's my troop transporter. It makes 5 more sounds, too.
R2-D2, where are you?
There's the laser cannon, stun gun, and stormtrooper.
Did he say that?
Oh, Dad.
Star Wars Imperial Troop Transporter. Stormtrooper sold separately. New from Kenner.
Now, we said a bunch of sort of disjointed thoughts about the films. It's obvious that
we'll probably say more disjointed thoughts about the films.
We'll probably say more, but it's obvious what our feelings are in that regard. Star Wars, of course, as we mentioned, is a merchandising juggernaut. There's been games since the first movies came out. There's been games since the arcades were big, so Star Wars does have a lot of games. Have you played any Star Wars games? And if you have, just give us a brief rundown.
You know, actually, I have not played a lot of Star Wars games. Probably the most I've played of a Star Wars game near to completion was probably Lego Star Wars at a relative's house, which is cute and fun. I mean, the Lego games are sort of accurate to the movies, except with exploding Lego pieces, so they're all right. I mean, you can't really be too harsh on Lego games. I think they're fun and, you know, age-appropriate, good for the family, stuff like that.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. The other games I've played, a bit of the N64 ones, I think it was like Shadows of the Empire, which I tried to like, and it's not that good, honestly, which is a shame.
You know what, I played that recently, and it is nowhere as good as I remember. I remember it always being kind of a pain in the ass to control, but it's not as good as I remember even. I like it thematically, and I like the story and the environments. It just doesn't play very well as a game, I think.
I also once upon a time had a copy of Podracer, which a lot of people love, but I actually did not like that game. So, yeah, I know that's really controversial opinion here, but sorry.
No, I kind of agree. I had a copy of Podracer as well, but on the console, on the N64, it just doesn't compare to, like, F-Zero X. And I've actually played it on the Dreamcast as well, and it's just, it's not bad, but it's not exceptional or anything.
I've always wanted to play the Super Star Wars games on the Super Nintendo, but they seem to have this, like, infamous thing that they're really hard, so I've never actually gotten around to it. I've been curious, though, so I'd like to pick them up. And I was also very curious to play Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. At the time, I think it came out on the PC when it first released, and I never had a good PC for gaming, so
held on. PC and Xbox, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, it's on Steam now, and also I can write it on a Mac, so I've been thinking about it, but I don't think I have the time to really put into it, but it's just something that I always thought was a cool concept with Knights of the Old Republic. It does get some favorable reviews, so it seems pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen a lot about it as well, and I've always wanted to play it, but in a similar situation, I just really couldn't. That and X-Wing and TIE Fighter games.
Yeah.
I play those as well, but I never had the opportunity to.
And for the sake of the podcast, I actually tried to play a bit of the Star Wars game that came out in Japan on the Famicom.
Right.
Which is a very awkward platforming game, but it's a very simplistic Famicom game that you would expect for most games. It's okay, just really weird hitboxes, stuff like that. Stuff you expect from old games. It's okay. I'm gonna just go through with it because it seems fun. So
it's the one that Darth Vader turns into a scorpion.
Yes. The reason for that is apparently that Luke is just having hallucinations like he has in like a cave when he's training with Yoda. That's the in-game reason, I guess. Or is Darth Vader just really a scorpion? I don't know.
Yeah. The Super Star Wars games that you mentioned, they actually take a lot of liberties as well, like the Sandcrawler is humongous and you fight like gigantic wampas and such. It's like there's a lot of liberties taken with it. The Super Star Wars series is actually really good, but as you mentioned, it's really hurt. I remember one of the angriest I've ever seen my older brother at a video game was playing the Death Star escape in Super Return of the Jedi, which was absolutely ridiculous. It has a reputation for a reason. They're worth playing, though. You can even play as Wicket in Super Return of the Jedi, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
In terms of my Star Wars games that I've played, I guess the ones I've liked the most are Rogue Leader series. I haven't actually played through Rogue Squadron on the Nintendo 64. I was going to do that before the podcast, but I was like, I don't really have enough time to play through a whole game of Star Wars and get medals and things like that before the podcast, so I'll just do it. So I'll just do it on my own time anyhow, but Rogue Leader on the GameCube is my favorite Star Wars game, and it is pretty friggin' incredible. I still enjoy playing it now. It was really, really good. It was the first game that to me felt like playing Star Wars. I know some people have had that with, like, X-Wing and TIE Fighter and things like that, but for me, Rogue Leader was the first game that I ever felt like I was actually playing Star Wars. Rebel Strike, Rogue Squadron 3 was good as well, but not as good as Rogue Leader. They had a lot of on-foot missions that kind of muddied the pot a bit, or it's like shit in the stool or whatever kind of badge you want to use. And I was like, Yoda's like, press X again, double jump, you will. That was funny. But it's like, you're trying to do too much Rebel Strike. You're trying to do too much. Stick to the aircraft missions and the walker missions. Like, there's, I think the level's called Guns of the Brilliant, and you're piloting an AT-AT and an AT-ST in it. And that's my favorite mission because it's just really, really freaking good. But yeah, those two games are really good. As for other Star Wars games, I already mentioned Super Star Wars. I kind of like The Empire Strikes Back on Atari 2600. You know, they're pretty good. I played a few, but the Rogue Squadron games are probably my favorite. Now, licensed games, they often fall short, but do you think this is so for Star Wars, just based on what we've been talking about here? It was a bit hit and miss for you, or do you find that Star Wars are usually a bit better than other licensed games?
Well, based on my own experience, I guess Star Wars is a bit falling short, but I feel like Star Wars is such a massive property that I think it's hit or miss, really. They have a lot of good stuff, which I would say is, like you mentioned, Rogue Leader and Rogue Squadron. I would guess Knights of the Old Republic is up there. And then we have Pod Racer, so they definitely got some really good games there, and they definitely just have some sort of bit not really quite hitting the mark.
To be fair, the Phantom Menace game on the PlayStation 1 was also not good. So it was better than the movie, but it's not that great. So the Phantom Menace tie-in games maybe aren't the best example, but I think in general, Star Wars is often handled
in house. Well, not anymore, I guess. RIP. But also, like, developers like Factor 5 are generally really, really good. So there are tie-in games with Star Wars that are there just to bank. But there's also Star Wars games that are handed off to really good developers that are really good. It kind of actually makes me wonder how that Bounty Hunter game was, but I didn't touch it because it was a new trilogy game. But you didn't play any of that, did you? The Jango Fett game?
Nah, I mean, I should have, though, because I do love Boba Fett, and
Fets are cool. I figured with your Dirge of Cerberus love, you might play it, but anyhow, that's the games of Star Wars, I suppose, folks.
Your step must be quick. Your action, sure.
Yoda puppet and the Force lightsaber, each sold separately.
As you move your lightsaber, the sound of the Force moves with you. It can be a powerful friend. That is your first lesson. Learn it well.
The Force is in my lightsaber.
The Force is in all things, even you, my young Jedi.
The Force lightsaber and new Yoda puppet, each sold separately. From Kenner Star Wars, the Empire Strikes Back Collection.
The Star Wars universe also has sort of an expanded universe where other authors have taken the series in directions of their own and expanded on the lore and expanded on the history. A lot of it might be made sort of moot with the new trilogy coming out, but we'll talk about the expanded universe and the books. Now, you're the expanded universe dork here, so I really can't comment too much on it. I'll just tell you, folks, since this is Chris's show for this segment, I'll just mention that the only Star Wars books I've read are Shadows of the Empire, which was pretty good, although they spent a little too much time talking about how bangable Prince Xizor is. And
I don't think I've read this one, so...
I also read about half of a Han Solo book that was starting to go a bit Harlequin romance, so I was like, yeah, I'm out on this, it's getting kind of junky, but that's about the extent of what I've read about the Star Wars books, and I don't really know anything about the expanded universe. So, Chris, tell us a bit about your history with Star Wars books, and you can touch on anything with the expanded universe that you want to as well.
Yeah, so when it comes to books, I've read a couple of things here and there. I couldn't really remember because most of it is from my childhood. Stuff of it is stuff I learned from, like, classmates who were reading comics and stuff. And from the comics, I believe, that's where you get a lot of Boba Fett's history after the Star Wars original trilogy. He survived the Sarlacc pit. He escaped. Good. That's cool. Yeah. I mean, he's a really cool character, so I always wanted to know more about him. So I'm glad he survived that. And he had a more fitting death later on in his life.
Yeah, exactly. That was a very indignified death. And people always make fun of me for liking Boba Fett, and they point that out all the time, so... Come on.
Yeah.
Anyhow, continue.
Yeah, I do admit that Expanded Universe is a bit ridiculous. It's essentially like fan fiction, but it somehow got published, I like to say. But some of it is good, some of it is bad. Boba Fett's history is, like, so ridiculously wild, and how many different adventures... It's really cool to read, but just trying to keep all the history together is really complicated. And I can see why it's so difficult to pull together a fresh new movie built on Expanded Universe when it goes so many different directions with so many different characters. But otherwise, I don't really remember much about the original trilogy stuff I read, except, like, you know, tidbits and stuff, like what happened with Luke's future when he eventually marries, or what happens with Leia and Han's kids later on. I think most of my memory is with stuff I read once, like, Phantom Menace came out, and they created even more expanded universe stuff about Anakin's time training with Obi-Wan. I mean, some of it was interesting. It's for, you know, youth, so it's not exactly the most amazing writing, but it's definitely enjoyable, and I just like the world-building aspect of Star Wars because there's just a lot of characters and alien worlds that are really interesting, so just that extra pieces of information for me were just really neat.
Yeah, I know people often refer to certain Sith Lords and such from the lore of the Expanded Universe, so there's always been certain things I've wanted to look into in the Expanded Universe, but it's sort of like, you know, where do you start, and is it all to the same quality kind of thing?
Yeah, if I was just going into expanded universe, I think it's best to just start with, you know, characters you like and you want to see what their histories are. I think that's always a good place to start. I mean, it's going to be really difficult, especially for someone like, say, Luke, who has way different histories just because he was the main character and there's so many different people want to take their own history with him. But he's got some good parts, so maybe you can take a chance with any one of the novels or something.
So I guess there's probably various entry points depending on what you're interested in. I think a lot of people would probably go the Boba Fett route, even if they make fun of a Sarlacc death. I think Boba Fett's one of the characters that has the most mystique about them in the movie, even with the whole Jango Fett stuff in the prequel trilogy. You want to see like his bounty hunts and things like that. Is there an IG-88 book? Because IG-88 is pretty dope too.
Yeah.
You're saying that some of the cartoons are considered part of the expanded universe?
I don't know how the cartoons align with canon, but I would say, yeah, definitely the cartoons relate to the expanded universe. I think they took a fair deal about the Clone Wars animated cartoon.
Yeah.
Some of that didn't transfer too well to Attack the Clones because General Grievous was a lot better in the cartoon than he was in the movie.
I did actually watch some of the Clone Wars cartoon, and it was actually pretty good. It's been a while ago now, so I really can't talk about it in detail, but I do remember liking it. So that's a bit of an improvement on some of the prequel trilogies.
I do recall there was a Clone Wars cartoon that was CG, and that one wasn't as good. I don't remember liking it. And there's also currently right now Star Wars Rebels, which is airing, and I tried to take interest in that. I think I'm a bit too old for it, but it doesn't seem bad. I was considering watching more of it because it does go into Boba Fett's time. This takes place like after Attack of the Clones, I believe, so it's still Boba Fett growing up, and it's still Boba Fett after, you know, Jango Fett's demise, so he makes an appearance there, so I always found that interesting.
Boba Fett, for some reason, he had R2-D2 and C-3PO as well, and he thought that IG-88 looked like an angel.
Also, he came riding a water dinosaur, and
yeah.
let's not talk about the Christmas cartoon.
Just to say something else about books, I have read a couple of sort of source books or ancillary books to the Star Wars series, like about the machines and about the aliens and things like that. So it's interesting that all of the characters at the cantina actually have backstories, like official backstories, and some of them are actually quite detailed. It's impressive how much character depth or character building is in Star Wars as well. Probably that really ridiculous looking werewolf from the cantina that's just like someone in a Halloween mask. He's probably got the most detailed backstory of any of them, who knows. But I do like that the background characters are treated as characters as well. So you can find out more about those in the books at your local library, Reading Rainbow.
Find out more badass stories about Yoda, because Yoda was always badass. We're still not sure if there are other Yodas around besides that one other Yoda, like, alien in the council. That was weird. The council's weird, by the way.
And his perverted Uncle Choda.
Yeah, the cantina had some weird creatures, but I don't know, the council was something else.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't get to talk about how cool Mace Windu is. Mace Windu is really cool, mostly because he's Samuel Jackson, but I liked Mace Windu a lot.
He has a purple lightsaber, too, and I was like, whoa, dude, you have a purple lightsaber? Not only are you cool, you got a badass lightsaber.
Exactly.
Maybe I'd have a purple lightsaber, going back to that question.
You know, yeah, I didn't get a chance to answer, but I would also like a purple lightsaber, so, alright, we got this.
Exactly.
I actually haven't read a lot of Mace Windu's expanded universe stuff, besides the stuff that correlates with Boba Fett, because, as we know, Mace Windu is responsible for Jango's demise, so there's a little tension there.
Yeah. Well, there you go, it's an assignment for the next podcast.
I guess so.
Chewie, an Imperial Probot, is searching for the Rebel base.
It's Kenner's turret and Probot playset. You have to put it together.
Let's check it out, Chewbacca. Keep me covered with a laser cannon.
Action figures each sold separately. You can move Han Solo with the action lever and knock out the Probot.
We got him, Chewie!
Yay!
But now they know where we are.
Turret and Probot playset from Kenner's Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back collection. Action figures each sold separately.
So, it's been a fairly loose podcast, but as I said, Star Wars is such a massive property that to do one podcast on is basically the way you have to go. But we're at the conclusion to Star Wars now. You know that question that people say, what was your favorite experience from this year, or some nebulous bullshit like that. I do have to ask, what does Star Wars mean to you? Has it had a lasting impact on what you consume, and has it had a hand in shaping your tastes? Like, what do you feel sets Star Wars apart from similar space operas?
Like I mentioned, I really love aliens, and I really love space ever since I was really, really young, so Star Wars just fits perfectly into this. Original trilogy, it's got that fantasy element. It's kind of like a medieval story, but in space, and that's really awesome. And then the newer trilogy introduced midichlorians, or whatever the heck you want to call them, and it just got really weirder than it should have been.
Yeah, we did well going this far to talking about midichlorians, and you kind of shit the bed there, but
Well, keep going. That's inevitable. But the way Star Wars, to this day, Star Wars is really, it's a big franchise that I still kind of hold dear to me, mostly for nostalgia, mostly because it's coming back and I'm trying to keep it together, but I'm not going to lie that I am sometimes hype and sometimes concerned. It's because I care so much about stars that I'm worried about it. And you know what, Yoda? Yoda is like, Yoda should be me. I am Yoda.
Yeah, for me, Star Wars is just, it is hard to boil it down to just what it is, but I guess what I like about Star Wars the most is the sense of adventure, and I know I say that about a lot of things. I just like things that have a great sense of adventure. Luke's sort of like a masterless swordsman looking for a master to reach his full potential and to save the galaxy. You know, it's a very traditional kind of plot, but it's done in ways that are still exciting, ways that are still interesting. You just see this entire galaxy that's far, far away, and you're seeing how populous it is and how diverse it is. It might be a trap, or it might, might not be a moon, it might be a space station, but there's such an air of wonderment to Star Wars. Like, even the very first scene, I think it's is a Corellian cruiser, but there's a Star Destroyer that comes after it, and it's like this big ship, and then there's this much, much bigger ship.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, it's all about scope, it's all about adventure. You know, it just still holds really well today, and I don't know, I just still like it. I still just like it. And although I'm very wary about additions to it, I can still give them a chance because I still hold Star Wars fairly dear.
Yeah, I think Star Wars essentially set the mold for me for this kind of media. Like, once I got into Star Wars, I would look into Star Trek, which I'm not terribly into, even though I probably should be. It's something that I've been trying to work for, like, over 2 decades or whatever. But Star Trek, of the episodes I've seen, of the movies I've seen, I do enjoy Star Trek. Not Trek yet, sorry. And, I mean, there was also Stargate, which I really got into, because aliens and more strange space travel, or X-Files, which is also, it's just the kind of the mystery of it, and really appeals to me.
I haven't really watched much Star Trek either. People want me to watch The Next Generation all the time, but I don't. Maybe I'll get into it at some point. This whole idea of space is sort of the final frontier if we're trying to talk about Star Trek, and you know what might lie beyond. And I think people have always looked to the stars, and they say, you know, what's out there, or what would I find if I could go out there, and what would the adventure be like if I could go beyond the stars, if I could actually travel in an interstellar fashion. It's, you know, the ultimate mystery and the ultimate adventure, and it's right above us. It's right above us, so it's within everyone's reach, yet not within everyone's reach. So it's the ultimate mystery, the, you know, the vast ether above us. What can you reach, and what secrets does it hold? So, you know, it's been with us since the dawn of humanity, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And Star Wars takes those stars that we see and we can't reach and populates them, and it sort of seeds our imagination and sort of lets us run wild with it and just say, hey, this could be out there in this galaxy far, far away, or on the outer ring of our galaxy, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I think that's just, you know, the sense of adventure. Like you said, it's sort of like in a medieval adventure, but it's taken that extra step by bringing in all the mysteries of space, and I think that's what keeps us interested in this.
I think that was really deep, Matt. I like that. That's my answer, too.
Sure.
That was.
Be careful! This place is crawling with biker scouts!
Don't worry, they don't mess for us Ewoks!
From Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection, we get W. Warwick and Princess Nisa each sold separately.
Why, Nisa, here comes a biker scout! Ayala! Let's go! Yibanga! He's gaining on us!
Wicked W. Warwick and Princess Nisa each sold separately from Kenner's Star Wars Return of the Jedi collection.
So this has been our Star Wars cast for November 2015. It was a pretty nebulous cast, but I think we summed up our thoughts about Star Wars fairly well. If you want to reach us, you can reach me at Mattazoic on Twitter, MattoZoic. It's like the Mesozoic era, except the dinosaurs are better. There's water dinosaurs and there's space dinosaurs. The website's the same, madazoic.com. If you want to reach the horse, it's at Aerocast on Twitter, AGROCAST. And Chris, where can we find you?
You can find me at twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU.
And what might we be doing in December?
We're going to go on a glorious date with a lad and a godfish.
Sort of a living vicariously through Link's dreams. So we will be playing...
Whose dreams? Ooh.
Link's dreams, yeah. We'll be playing The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening on the Game Boy. Potentially the DX version. I don't know what I'll play yet, but it's going to be fun.
I'm doing DX, so...
You're doing DX, so I may as well do the same, and you'll get the blue, and I'll get the red. So we'll be touching on Link's Awakening next month. Terrific game on the Game Boy. Spoilers, I'm probably going to be gushing about it.
I will too.
I have a lot of memories about it, so I'll get into those then. And I'm looking forward to talking about it. Thanks for listening tonight, folks, and we'll talk to you in a month's time. Cheers.
Cheers, and may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.